Hello and welcome back to another episode of Lessons in Product Management. I'm your host, John Fontenot, and today's episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Path to Product. Path to Product helps aspiring product managers gain the product management experience that they need to land their first product management role. If you're looking to get into product management, click the link in the show notes and get started at pathtoproduct.io.
On today's episode, I had the pleasure of being joined by Etienne Garbugli. Etienne has spent time in his career across the product spectrum, from UX design, UX research, product management, and he's even co-founded several startups. Etienne's currently the founder and CEO of Lean B2B, where he's helping train and coach B2B entrepreneurs and innovators. Etienne's also written several books like Lean B2B, Find Your Market, and Solving Product. And on today's episode, we're going to discuss one section of his book, Solving Product, and dive into how you can know when your startup is ready to enter the growth phase and what it takes to be successful in it. If you haven't read Solving Product, go grab your copy today. You'll be glad you did. But with no further ado, here's the conversation I had with Etienne. Hey, Etienne, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. Read your book, loved it, had to connect with you, and super excited that you gave me the time to do so.
I'm happy to be here.
Cool. So for the listeners who aren't familiar with who you are and what you've done with the great book, Solving Product, could you give a little bit of background about yourself and maybe a little bit about the book?
Yeah. So I've been working in or around products for the last 20 years, more or less. Started in UX, so UX research, gradually discovered the whole thing with Lean. So ended up leading to me creating a few startups, also pushing towards creating my first book, which was Lean B2B, specifically applying the Lean startup to B2B, the more complex B2B. And then I kept working for different companies, worked for startups, which will connect with why I wrote Solving Product. And I decided to keep expanding to create a full series out of the book. So I ended up writing three books that fit in the same sequence. And I'm constantly working with B2B startup founders or entrepreneurs, helping them with their business and their validation process.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I always appreciate practitioners who have lived it and done it and then took the time to give back with what they've learned. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah. I really love, I don't know if you read the Crossing the Chasm.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a really good book, but I hadn't really understood like what Jeffrey Moore was doing with his career. So like every 5 years or so, he's kind of doing like a brain dump of like what his career, like he's been learning in the last 5, 6, 7 years. And I kind of like that idea of like, you need to give back based on what you've learned, but also put in a package that is actually helping people. And I guess the thinking move forward.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate the mentality. I try to do similar myself. So hopefully we can make the world a better place little by little.
That's the goal.
Absolutely. So as I read the book, it was intriguing to me, like the way it was laid out. It almost felt like as you look at like those diagrams, those images of like a product life cycle or a business life cycle, it almost seemed to mirror that in a way, almost kind of like a life cycle checklist of, you know, what do you need to do to get to this point? How do you know you're here? I guess, what was the inspiration for laying it out that way? Or like what kind of brought that about?
Yeah. So as you might have seen with your book as well, like there's a big difference between the initial idea and like how the book actually comes out at the end. So there's always like different ideas in formatting, but this one is particularly different in terms of thinking about it. As I was testing with readers, kind of discovered a little bit where I really wanted to take it. Initially, the idea was to kind of do like a bit of a compendium of different approaches to learn from customers. So how you would learn at different stages. So I spoke to a lot of top leaders, a lot of experts, people in companies, product managers, to capture different approaches, try to find things that I didn't know about or discover new approaches. And as I was laying out, I kind of got into the idea of everything is kind of about making progress and how I could actually structure the book as a way to kind of get people to the next stage. And how you could actually try to always push for that idea of progress. So instead of creating it was a bit of a gamble, but like instead of creating a book that kind of has a start and an end, I kind of created, you could say kind of like 20, I think it's 24 different books, sub books within it that are kind of different steps that help product managers, product teams make progress in certain situations based on different approach, based on different alternatives. Because I figured, and that's kind of the feedback that I got, it's really what it's about is like, where am I? How do I get to the next stage? And what are some of the things that I can play with to kind of get there?
Yeah, that really came out as I read it. It was really cool because like I said before we started, like I've read so many books where you almost have to read several chapters to get to the core value of what the book was written about. And it's like, oh, that could have been an article, but this book really has like immense value in each section. And so I know we won't cover every section today because we don't have the time, and I really want the listeners to go out and buy it themselves. And I want to focus in on growth, but could we just lay out like what are the different sections that you cover in the book?
Yeah. So the first section, and it's kind of like it's the life cycle of a company, but it's also the life cycle of multiple products. Right. So if a company's kind of exploring new products, new avenues, I kind of had the idea of like they could actually do different stages or different things in parallel that way. So it starts with ideation. Then there's the startup phase where you're kind of trying to find your fit in the market, initial fit. The growth section that you want to cover, which is more about how you speed things up. Expansion, how you take it to next level. You expand the business size or the product size. And then how you get to kind of maximization and you push it beyond that. I'm not a believer of the idea that once a business is at the maturity, there's no paths for growth. So I kind of wanted to make that a part of the story there.
Yeah, no, and I love that you did that because in like those charts and graphs that you see about like product life cycles or business life cycles, it kind of insinuates that it always dies at the end.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I love the approach of like, no, you can reinvigorate growth.
100%. I guess one thing I'm trying to do with my career is kind of like clamp down on all these like ideas from like MBAs from the 80s that kind of totally like how you just exploit and then you don't need to speak to your customers. I think there's a lot of these things that were actually wrong and are kind of fundamentally integrated in our beliefs, which I think we kind of need to evolve out of.
Totally. And you just touched on something that was kind of the first question I wanted to ask. So I think most people understand, or at least the understanding is getting more ubiquitous around the need to talk to customers to reach product market fit. And like the whole concept of doing things that don't scale to get to a point where you can scale. But you make a really strong argument in the book about why you should keep talking to your customers once you're past product market fit and you're into growth, the growth phase. So yeah. I'd like you just to kind of share your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, at a minimum, like we often hear about like our product market fit as a destination and then you get there and everything's great. But it's actually like a state that you can actually lose quite easily. And it's not always the same level of strength in terms of your fit in the market. A lot of things can influence the way you are perceiving the market, the competition, the options, the just your positioning, the way you speak to customers, your reviews, everything like that. So it's always constantly, it's a good idea to kind of always reassess your positioning and kind of readjust where you are, both in terms of identifying new opportunities to grow the business, but as well just an idea of strengthening your positioning just to be able to keep going. I think we often talk about like it's almost like something that you need to do to speak with customers, but I think it should be, if you're doing it right, it should be opening up a lot of different avenues for growth or for exploration or for anything else with the business, new opportunities for new products, anything else. So there's a lot of like that competitive edge as well that kind of can come from it.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Like, you know, it's almost like this golden finish line of, hey, we reached product market fit, we're good forever. But I love how you're like, no, you have to like continually work on strengthening your product market fit. And one of the things you mentioned is about like how talking to your best customers is the way to really find out how to do that. And so I'm curious of like maybe background on how you identify that it's not just any customer, but your best customers. And then how do you find out who those are?
Yeah. So one thing we kind of see as a business grows is that either because the messaging wasn't clear or because there was different people that recommend a product for different reasons. Mm-hmm. You end up with people that are kind of eyeing the product for different reasons. And that ends up blurring a little bit the usage and blurring the strategy. So there's people that are kind of, they want to use your product for different reasons. And those reasons might lead to different types of future for your company. So you could decide to double down on one use case, and that would bring you to different avenues with your business. I think it's very important to constantly have this process of I'm exploring, I'm seeing what's out there, and then kind of refining around a certain set of use cases. It doesn't have to be, it can be less and less precise as you move forward because you're going to be targeting different segments probably as you keep growing. But especially initially, like to be really, really clear about and intentional about why you're targeting a certain segment, a certain use case, and what's that actually going to do with your business, because that's the best way to evaluate it. But as well, at the same time, it's a great way to speed things up because it's easier to sell something that has a clear positioning than something that can do many different things for many different types of people.
Yeah. I want to deviate just a second, just because you hit on something that I just want to double click on. So you talked about customers using your products in a way that you didn't intend, or having different usages for your product. For, I know this is another end of the spectrum, but for like founders or early teams that start seeing that, right? You have a strong vision of what change you want to make in the world, but you see that the value is in something different that you didn't expect.
Yeah.
I guess, like, from your perspective, how do you digest that? And when do you decide to pivot the vision?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess there's a big strategic question, is that what future are you trying to create with this business? Because my last book in this series is actually specifically about that, is how do you take something, you start from either technology or an invention or something like that, that can have multiple uses. How do you figure out which one is the best one to be able to scale and kind of accelerate in that direction? I think that's a set of questions that product teams, product organizations should probably be asking themselves more often than they do, because there is sometimes these other futures are actually better than the ones that they're actually in. And there's just that habit of being in a certain path that is not necessarily the best path for the company. Sometimes you're fighting, you're trying to climb the hill with pushing the boulder up the hill. Whereas in other cases, you might be able to go much faster, go in a different direction. So I think it's always really important to understand these adjacencies and kind of understand what's the trade-off if we do go in that direction. Can we actually go in multiple directions at the same time? One thing we're kind of seeing in SaaS or in product is like there's more and more companies that are actually building a product suite as opposed to building a singular product. And that kind of addresses that feature set, that the set of needs that customers might have in a certain segment.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you touching on that, because that's always been an interesting question as someone who's trying to start something himself, right? of looking for those signals. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. I think it's about finding the point of greater leverage. It's basically, in some situations, you may be in a position to capitalize on opportunities that were not there before, or that you've just discovered that are way, way better. And sometimes you, for various reasons, you do not want to pursue those directions.
Yeah, no, I like that. So if I can just kind of like recap that, it sounds like the founder or this like early stage company leadership team needs to keep an open mind of like, what are the market opportunities? We're going in this direction, but if we see opportunities, we need to be open-minded to explore them and see if that's a better direction, or if that still gets us to the end state that we want to achieve, like the vision. And is it just a small pivot, or is it a complete shift? Oh, I was just gonna say, and then like seeing like if it is a complete shift, or if it is a small direction, is that something that, is that a place we want to go? And just make that decision.
Yeah, at least be aware of the possibilities. And that can apply more specifically on the product, because just addressing the different sub-segments while understanding their specific desired outcomes or goals and all these things is also part of the stories where you can maximize the direction that you're taking.
Yeah, I love that. So this next question I have is a little bit long, so bear with me. But in chapter 12, you suggest that post product market fit, one of the things we need to do to start being able to grow is to reduce friction, which I completely agree with, and how messaging and positioning should be optimized post product market fit as well. But then in the last chapter on growth, you talked about how like we need to find our best acquisition channels for our business. And so it feels like those two things work really well together. So in your mind, should those things be done in parallel, or like, should we be focused on reducing friction in all channels before we find the best one? I guess if you could elaborate on that a little bit more.
Yeah. I think part of the reason why it's structured that way is kind of to want to simplify it a little bit, but also to kind of avoid the issue where people are trying to prematurely grow and try to go all in like with ads in a certain direction. Because the reality is the acquisition channels that you should be using should be related to the specific profiles that you're targeting. So you may have found product market fit. You might have different sub audiences within sub segments within that audience. And depending on which ones you decide to emphasize, there might be different answers to what is our best avenue for acquiring new customers. Because you might need to kind of weed out or figure out what the right pattern is. For example, if you're in B2B, you might at this stage try to figure out what the right messaging is. And that gives you an idea of who the initiator is on a certain deal. So you might need to speak to different stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And that stakeholder would require you going through sales or going through a distribution channel or different approach like that. So one kind of influences the other, but it's that process of, okay, so let's tighten up what we have, figure out what's working, and then from there explore what are the best paths for us to grow based on this pattern.
Yeah. But one of the assumptions I had when reading it was, well, maybe you start trying to reduce friction in all channels first, and that helps lead you to what your best channels are, because you get to see like what is easier to optimize for or what is more natural for what's going to work for your business. So curious if you have any kind of follow-up thoughts on my assumption.
Yeah, I think the challenge is to work too much on the like, I understand there's different schools of thoughts based on like when you should be, what you should be, what is product market fit first initially. Yeah. The idea that it's also product and market and channel, distribution, all these aspects together. Yeah. I'm more of a believer that should be done afterwards. You should find it at the micro scale to be able to scale it afterwards. I can understand situations where people factor that in, but you're also adding other variables in your validation there, where the acquisition channel might also have influenced the product market fit. So mm-hmm. you may not be able to reproduce the same kind of pattern. Maybe I was speaking to an entrepreneur, and he was talking about how basically their first product market fit was based on people that actually knew them. They knew their brand before and their personal brands. So that completely biased the sample set. So their assessment of, okay, well, so this was working, it's no longer working. So there's a difference there. And by not trying to push too much for acquisition initially, you might be able to avoid that. But there's definitely a preference aspect there in the way you do things.
That's a good call out. So segmentation and knowing where your audience is coming from, I guess, really helps influence those decisions later on.
Yeah, but there might be really positive things there where so the path might be scalable, the path to how people discovered the product and basically led to you finding product market fit for that segment, that might be completely scalable.
Totally. So kind of following up on the removing friction piece, so you say it in the book that the goal is understanding the differences in profiles or goals or jobs to be done. You know, what behaviors that make some users convert and others drop off.
Yeah.
Was the intent there to fix drop off and to widen the conversion funnel, or to double down on kind of the ideal customer profile?
It's more on doubling down the ideal customer profile. So if you look at the first sections in the book, It's kind of this idea of where you kind of refocus your targeting. So you figure out who the right profile there. And it's in this case, it might be more looking towards their motivation and the reasons why they decide to hire the product and what the outcome is of their use of the product. So in that case, you might be able to just narrow down this process. I found interesting in the last few years, there's been more and more discourse around the idea of go-to-market fit, which I think probably echoes a little bit of what I'm trying to push through in that section. The idea of like where you figure out what the right recipe that you want to bring forth in the market. And that includes just more clarity around who your ideal customer profile is.
And it makes a lot more sense now that I ask it too, because going back to one of the early questions about identifying your best customers to strengthen product market fit, those things all work together. So it makes
sense. Yeah. That's definitely like a strategic choice, like because the idea of best is definitely very subjective to some extent.
Right. No, that makes sense. So last question I have for you. And again, I still appreciate this time because, you know, it's always good to talk to somebody who like I'm reading the words and I'm like, yes, this is awesome. And then to actually get to like hear your thought process behind it is just pretty cool. But one of the big topics, especially in SaaS, is like the whole product-led growth motion. Freemium as being kind of like the end all be all for SaaS. But in the book, you talk about only considering like a free tier or a freemium model for acquisition once you've validated the potential, right? And the statement almost seems kind of controversial because like everyone's pushing it right now, saying like you can only be successful in SaaS with freemium.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like I agree with validation, like that just feels like good product work in general. but like, what are some ways that you would suggest going about trying to validate it, or ways that you've seen it work well to validate its potential as a go-to-market model?
Yeah. I definitely got to the same situation where I was wondering as well, like, because like the omnipresence of product-led growth and discussion around that. So I actually spent some time reevaluating it for the newest edition of Lean B2B, because I was like, okay, so how does that actually play within the validation process and all these things? But I think it's important to understand that for example, a freemium strategy is very much a go-to-market strategy. So that kind of comes after validating, because the idea is if you start doing freemium, if you start doing free tier, for example, you'll need to optimize all the little sub-steps there as opposed to optimizing the core value of the product. And if you spend all your time there, chances are that you'll run out of time or run out of funding to do the other thing, the core validation. So I've definitely make that mistake myself in the past of doing like freemium. And then you're like, okay, so I got to make sure that these landing page convert where you're not actually working on the product itself. So the product feature and the core value of the product. So it can be quite problematic. I definitely think that that's the future and probably more than what we assume right now. In terms of giving access to products for free and having different tiers like that. Whereas if you are to consider this, I think you should definitely make sure that you have product market fit, because you can, it's the same idea as if you're also including the acquisition channels in this. It's just blurring your evaluation where you're just introducing more variables that can actually influence your assessment. It can be done, but probably is trickier to assess. Whereas you're kind of creating multiple products in that case, where you need to have like a first product market fit on the free trial on the freemium feature set. Then you need to have something that kind of takes it to the next level. So I feel like it's probably better to kind of do it retroactively once you kind of have something that works in terms of the core product. And then you can just cut out parts of the usage or cut out part of the access. When I was working at Lander, we basically had a free tier and freemium as well. So we experimented a lot on the idea of free freemium, framing the freemium as a free tier, free trial, all these different things. And it's really way better with data, because when you have data coming in, so when you have actually customers and you're starting to scale, because at that point, you're actually able to gauge enough first times experience of people coming to the product, which is kind of hard to reproduce even in isolation or try to segment the data and kind of figure out like what was the pattern that people did in this case, since you're pretty much investing a lot in like changing the product, it's probably better to be able to do micro tests before and kind of test the entry point the landing page, all these different things, once you start having enough data to kind of do these, run these tests.
Yeah, no, I agree. It feels like the conversation of like whether or not freemium is right feels like a much later discussion to have than like the first discussion to have, right? Like there's market validation. Is there a market there? Do we understand the problem and the value we're creating? And then like what I've been racking my brain on with freemium is like, do you give like just enough features to where like it, you know, forces the upgrade, or do you give something that like, you see a lot of companies where they give complete value, but it's either usage based or user based. Yeah. And then some hide like maybe the lighters behind a paywall.
Yeah.
My gut tells me it's not a one size fits all answer. It's a, it depends answer. But yeah. I'm curious if you've seen like certain methods of that monetization model work better than others.
Well, it's also dangerous if you don't understand the customer breakdown and the market and all these things, because you don't, it's very difficult to know the breakdown of like where you're going to be losing money in that landscape a little bit. So it's very difficult to understand like how many of these customers will actually reach these thresholds where they're actually going to be retained and going to want to keep using the product at that amount. I think it's definitely the future, but yeah, it does come much later. And I think it's probably better to kind of dose it a little bit and kind of starts with experiments and go step by step in that direction. When it comes to specifics, I think it's definitely experimentation in that case.
Yeah, completely agree. Well, Etienne, I really appreciate you coming on, man. This has been awesome. If you haven't gotten the book yet, Solving Product is a fantastic book. Make sure to go pick it up. You said there's another version of Lean B2B coming out. So is there anything else the listener should be looking for or any place you would direct them to go get it?
So basically just it came out a few months back, the new version of Lean B2B. And now the suite is all aligned on the same drivers and everything else. It should work well together.
Well, I'm embarrassed. I've been heads down on this one. So I need to go find the new Lean B2B.
Perfect. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, make sure you like and subscribe if you're watching on the YouTube channel. If you're watching if you're listening on the podcast, make sure that you rate and review and subscribe or follow if you haven't already. And thanks for joining me this week. And we'll see you next week for another lesson in product management.